Blog Talk Radio.
The time is now 6:03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3:03 p.m. on the West Coast, and wherever you are in the world, that's what time it is, wherever you are in the world. Today is Saturday, 5-7-2022. That's right. And you're tuned into the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live. I'm broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you for joining us. And by the way, let me go ahead and open the chat room. I'm running a little bit behind schedule, but thank you again. We have some great topics coming up, and there are some things, and you guys know that we try our best to be on top of what's happening each and every day of the week up until showtime. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But fortunately, we have some great topics we're going to talk about. You guys know about some of the things that we're going to talk about that happened this week and actually that occurred really right after we got off air last week, okay? So during the week, I keep saying week, but during the week, I try to remind myself, hey, look, we got to touch on that. We got to touch on that. Thanks to Janet Davis, who does a lot of the research on the topics and everything, and I truly appreciate her for taking time and doing that. And, you know, it goes by so fast, but sometimes having more information than not having enough. So in the first hour, we're going to talk about a few things that has happened in the past week that I'm sure you guys have heard of. And then in the second hour, we're going to talk about some topics, and we have a guest who's going to join us. He's joined us before. A former attorney, Lyle Dixon, is going to join us and give us a little bit of his opinion and what the law states on some of the things we're going to talk about, okay? So without further ado, let me open up some microphones here. Of course, the lady of the house, Miss Janet Davis, or should I say, Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis.
All right, all right, all right. How are you tonight? You doing okay?
I'm doing fine. Thank God, you know, well, you know, we talked last week about the aches and pains that we get, and fortunately, it's not bad for me today. So I'm thankful and I'm blessed, and I'm glad that we're here today, like we do every Saturday. So, and how about yourself?
I'm doing okay. Gout is getting better, and I'm just, you know, looking forward to the, you know, the show tonight.
Fantastic, fantastic. Here's another hand that's up. And you know, I'm glad this brother has chimed in. He waved his hand. Please welcome back to the show, Officer Dan, Crenshaw.
Hey, Crenshaw. Long
hey,
time
Dan.
No
I love
you. Know, I had to put that Dragnet thing in there. You know how Dragnet used to start that. Dan.
I would have preferred 850. But Dragnet works.
Okay. At least your last name isn't Friday. So. So.
How you doing, my brother?
Look, that used to be the show.
Yeah. I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm having to move my daughter out of her dorm from UGA. She graduates next Friday.
Wonderful.
I'm moving stuff. Back and forth between today and tomorrow. So if I sound drunk, it's probably because I am.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I can dig that. Hey, and by the way, we have a, I'm going to say a mystery caller. I'm not going to call them out right now. I see they're on the board, and when they wave their hand, they're going to wave their hand when they're ready, but they're going to join us in the conversation today. So it should be interesting. And like I said, I'm opening up the chat room and welcoming folks in the chat room. So like I said, we have 2 hours to burn. And some things have happened this week. It's really interesting that's really been talked. A certain gentleman passed away at the age of 57, Mrs. Samuels. So we're going to talk about that. But let's first talk about the Dave Chappelle fiasco. Was this Negro thinking? Did he think he was damn Will Smith? What the hell? And did you see the photograph of him afterwards? He looked
they
like a leg. No, did you see his arm? He looked like, like one of those Ken dolls where you can turn the arm any way you want to. That's what he looked like. I mean, they beat the crap out of this cat. They literally did on the side of the stage in plain view of the audience. You know, and you kind of wonder because what's interesting, well, what I found really funny was that when Chris Rock got up on stage and got the microphone and asked, was that Will Smith?
Yeah, that was funny.
But the question is, and it's crazy, the attack on comedians now. You know, Dave Chappelle was attacked for his laugh. Stand up on, you know, what he had said, and people wanted him, you know, taken off of Netflix. Netflix dropped him. He's doing this, he's doing that. Look, when you go to a comedy show, you go into a comedy show. Now comedians are kind of afraid. Howie Mandel was just recently saying, I saw him just on one of the entertainment shows or whatever, that he don't even want to do comedy anymore. Because he's in fear of his life. And we all know how Harry is about shaking hands, right? He don't like to touch people. He was that way before the pandemic. He don't like people to touch him. So,
you know,
Because
when I work in the streets, the way I de-escalate most of the situations that I encounter to where I would have had to fight somebody or lock somebody up by making them laugh. Once you get them to laugh, the anger's gone. The frustration's gone.
You de-escalate the situation, right, especially as an officer.
Right.
That's your job, is to de-escalate, not to escalate the situation, but de-escalate
it. So if everybody's fighting over comedy now, our world is through. It's gone back. Everybody's going to be walking around with the Bogomil walk, all stiff and anal and angry.
Well, we're turning into a dictatorship, in a sense, because if you look at countries like, I mean, you could make jokes about the presidents here, right? But in Russia, you can't. In China, you can't. You can't stand on stage and talk about the president and make jokes and this and that and the other, right? So I see that. I see a hand waving here, and I know who it is.
Yeah, and
I'm going to let them say hello. I'm going to let them say hello. And you guys, welcome our caller. Caller 215-805. How you doing?
Hey. Hi, Janet. Hi, Dr. Crenshaw. Hey, Mike. It's Dr. Cindy.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey.
Oh, my goodness.
How's everybody? How you doing, honey?
I'm so
That's
glad you
good.
Called. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted to call in today. Mike called me and asked me, but he said that the topic was going to be one of the topics was going to be on Roe versus Wade, and I wrote an essay. Of, you know, I'm always writing these essays, and I wrote an essay on it about May 3rd.
Okay.
Was it May 3rd? Yeah, on May 3rd, I wrote an essay for Medium on it. Yeah, because
right.
You know, everybody's screaming Roe versus Wade. I'm in the rafters hollering, Plessy versus Ferguson. Anybody? I've been screaming that for years now.
Right.
Wow.
It's not just Roe versus Wade, and this isn't the first time
exactly.
that things have been reversed, you know, because they have, throughout the years, taken blacks' rights away when it comes to voting. They give it, they take it. They give it, they take it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to continue the conversation, but let me keep opening up some microphones.
Oh yeah, that's
here.
Right. You were talking about the violence against this last comedian.
Yeah. Well, hold on a minute. Hold that thought for a minute. Let me keep opening up mics of the co-host here because, of course, you guys that are listening on the internet, I want to let you know that Dr. Cynthia Elise Smith, okay, she's in Pennsylvania. Just to give you a little layout of myself and Janet Davis and Officer Crenshaw are here in the ATL Nava, and then I'm going to open up the mic to the one, the only author, actor, and sometimes comedian, Mr. Timon Shipp.
Hi,
hello there.
Yay.
I wish one of y'all would run up on stage when I'm up there now. I can't be responsible, but it's going to happen to you now. And I'm going to start.
We'll be your blockers.
What's that?
We'll be your blockers, you know, blocking
okay.
the people.
Okay. I was going to tell you, I was going to sit on stage with a bag of bricks. And if you run up there, you're going to catch one. I'm going to go back to East St. Louis, Illinois on you. I got a problem.
A bat and a brick.
Nothing yet. Even one on work, Mike. Atlanta,
well, that's
the show, it shows, you know, it get people to
right,
calm down.
But that's a good question because, and thank you for joining us, Timon, because I know you got a lot to say on these topics. But I believe that Dr. Smith was about to say something. Yeah, we were talking about that. We were starting that. But here's what's interesting is the response time of security. When you look at that video, where was the security in front of the stage? How did this guy get past? Because most concerts or events that you go to, there's usually, you know, five or six guys right there in the front, right? You know, they might have the T-shirts on that say, you know, LPG security or something. Or they're just in suits with a little earpiece, you know, so they can communicate with each other. But this cat came from the far left-hand side and got a good running start. Where was the security?
he was actually close to the stage. He was right up front, actually. He was constantly making a move closer. Because one of the comedians said they remember him making a move to get closer to the stage. And that's when he made his move and he jumped over, you know, because, you know, Mike, you don't run into that at comedy performances. You may get a heckler and somebody might try to say something to you when you get off stage, but they never ran up on the stage. Now, there was a guy probably at the Comedy Store who came up on the stage and used the N-word and had said it toward the audience, and he didn't see his 6'7" brother in the back who grabbed the chair and threw it like he was throwing a baseball and took dude out. And
okay.
Sure, a lot of rumor, and he dropped that word, that brother, shoom, that chair came flying, bam, dropped that dude right. And hey, all the heard was dead silence. Man, and he didn't hit nobody else. It was
okay.
Over the crowd, over the whole crowd, right on up to the stage and took dude out. You know, that's the only type of thing I've ever seen. I've never seen really anybody, you know, run up on stage. That's something new today. I think Kevin Hart made a good point that we need to go back to what was and quit being, you know, because there are a lot of sensitive people, but a lot of this stuff is just going too far.
Wasn't he
had
mental issues?
Go ahead.
Didn't the guy have mental issues, they said?
Well,
no?
You know, everybody's claiming mental issues now. I mean, Chris Rock himself has been going to a therapist for the last 3-4 years for his mental issues, but he still gets up on stage and performs. Everybody, oh, I'm crazy. Well, everybody's crazy because we don't even know what normal is anymore, you know? And every time you think somebody's normal, you find out he's crazy, you know? So I don't even know, you know, we just had a woman help a murderer get out of jail. They said she was a wonderful and hardworking correctional officer.
That's one of our topics.
Yes. Well, that's one of our topics. We don't want to switch gears too quick, but let me just kind of share with you guys a little bit here that I pulled up, which is interesting. According to the New York Times, okay, which a lot of other outlets are sharing, Dave Chappelle spoke to alleged attacker backstage. Here's what the suspect said. According to this article, Dave Chappelle said he actually spoke to his alleged Hollywood Bowl attacker backstage after Tuesday's attack, and the wannabe rapper gave a rambling reason for why he did it, a report said. The famous comic told the crowd at a secret comedy show in Los Angeles Thursday night that he convinced security to let him approach Isaiah Lee, who was 23 years old, before he was hauled away by cops, according to the Hollywood Reporter. Quote, I needed to talk to him, the 40-year-old told the crowd. This is Dave saying. Chappelle said he asked Lee why he did it, and the accused attacker launched into a story about how his grandmother had been forced out from Brooklyn neighborhood because of gentrification, and the publication reported. Lee's onstage attack was supposed to shed light on her situation. The comedian said that Lee, who 2 years ago put out a rap song named after Chappelle, appeared to be mentally ill. Lee's older brother, Aaron Lee, revealed in a Rolling Stone interview Wednesday that his sibling struggles with mental illness and takes medication. Did you guys know about this?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. I mean, but why is it so prevalent now that people, I mean, the thing is that where Will Smith, I guess now we're finding out that he has some mental illness, right? Because he's in the hospital.
Yeah.
You didn't know that ahead of time before he went and slapped Chris
Rock?
Well,
I mean, you know, Mike.
You know, I'm not trying to compare the two, but you know what I'm saying?
No, I get you. But Richard Pryor, Miss Judd, who just passed away, the Ashley Judd's mama, they said she died. She had mental issues. you know, Robin Williams, you know.
Right.
There,
yeah.
I think these issues have all, and I believe you can say, you might as well go in and say Prince and Michael Jackson had mental issues.
Yes.
Of the way that they left out of here. Although some people say that somebody took them out, but to, like, if you say, you look at Michael Jackson and you look at the transformation that he went through,
mm-hmm.
of what he
right.
did to himself, as well as him taking propofol to go to sleep. When you find out that's an anesthesia drug, who does that?
Right. Right.
And how can you get a hold of it?
And you know,
to the doctor and ask for anesthesia medication.
Right.
Right.
I think, I think Dr. Smith was trying to speak. Go ahead.
Oh.
Who was trying to speak? I'm sorry. I thought it was Dr.
Yeah.
Smith. Was it you, dude?
It was me.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Michael Jackson also had vitiligo, and for some people, it can mentally mess them up, you know, because your body is going through changes and changing colors, you know. So he stayed hidden for a while there, and then he comes out a different color, and everybody was like, thought he bleached himself, but he didn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that, and then the problem with his dad. You know, how strict his father and everything was. You know, he talked about that a lot. So he was robbed of his childhood. And he also talked
yeah.
about that.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that when people question Michael Jackson's skin or bleaching of it, it was when he released the Bad album, okay? A totally different looking Michael Jackson. It wasn't the Jerry Curl Michael Jackson from the earlier albums. It wasn't, you know, that style anymore from the Thriller albums and stuff like that. Totally different. He was definitely lighter. And before the album really caught on fire, just the cover alone had people talking about his look. Wouldn't you agree? They looked
yes.
at that cover and saw a lighter Michael Jackson. It was like, what the hell? You know, it shocked us. You know,
well, you
dress,
lose pigment completely when you have vitiligo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
mm-hmm.
why he started wearing that glove. It's a lot of things that I've read over the years, you know, that made a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you don't mind sharing, I'm sure most of us here know, for the listeners, Janet has vitiligo, so she does understand. You know, she's not just speaking
yes.
from hearsay. She's had vitiligo for how long now, Janet?
Since I was 9 years old, and I'm now
72.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she
okay.
does.
Mm-hmm. So, this is not hearsay. I find it interesting that what also is going on, and not just the attack with Dave Chappelle, but there's another story that came about this week. Unfortunately, the death of, what's his name, Samuel? I'm sorry, I had it up here on my screen. Dr. Smith, are you still there?
Yeah, I just had myself muted.
Okay.
I'm here.
I don't know. Okay, yeah, I was looking for the story on Mr. Samuel's here, and my screen went dark. Kevin Samuel, right? This guy... well, this gentleman just passed away this week, 57 years old, and he was he became a YouTube star, basically, right? Had millions of viewers, and some people loved his commentary or his what he spoke about, but then there were some folks that hated him. In fact, people wanted his post to be taken down. But still, they don't know the cause of death. Are you guys familiar who Kevin Samuels was? Anyone?
Kevin Samuels?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar. I didn't watch any of his YouTube shows. I only got partly interested when I noticed comments from Black Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just did a little bit of research on who he was. And they do know how he died, by the way. He died from cocaine and fentanyl.
Oh.
Cocaine laced with fentanyl.
Okay. I guess the article that I read didn't give that. I guess it was an overall.
Yeah, it's been put out there now that he died from a combination of cocaine and fentanyl. See, a lot of people that get into these drugs, they don't realize what they're cutting it with. And he told the woman he couldn't breathe, and then he fell on top of her and passed away.
Wow.
Now, isn't that interesting? You know, Mike, that's interesting that the way he talked about things and how he talked to people, how much mental illness was he going through, the fact that turn around and all that you said.
Yeah.
That he wasn't, you know, that he was a straight up guy, that he's doing something to, and find out he's doing cocaine laced with fentanyl.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and finish up time and then
when she just stated that blows me away, because it's like, man, you were talking like you were some people call it talking down to women or saying negative things, but why did you need drugs, or were you already doing drugs to live this particular, because he made it seem like his lifestyle and the way he lived his life, he was like, you know, he was a Boy Scout, and he was checking these women and everybody else that called him up, telling them go get jobs and do this and do that. And now I find out you've been out there doing, you've been out there acting like a regular drug addict. A little bit of everything. That's drugs, man. And like you said, you don't know what they cutting this stuff with today with that fentanyl. At 54?
Right.
And you still doing cocaine?
Well, he was 57. He passed away. He was 57.
How old was he?
57. Okay.
It's ironic that he always talked about women dying alone. And he basically, you know, died on top of this 25-year-old prostitute. He's also got a video where he actually says that if he changed his platform to talking about women and black women in particular and in a particular way, that he would get more followers, that he would get more popular. And he did exactly what he did. He didn't do it because he was some sort of guru. He just did it. He did it because, and this speaks to mental illness too, he needed to be adored, or he needed to be taken seriously. He needed some sort of relevance.
Here, I'm just going to pull up this something real quick, and then I'll let you respond, Timon, and then let other folks respond after you. But I'm just keep pulling up different information on the interview. According to NBC News, Kevin Samuels, YouTuber with 1.4 million subscribers. Now, think about the difference here. Not people who've seen him, but subscribers who followed him, okay? 1.4 million people. That's a hell of a lot, okay? Has died. His mother said Samuel views on dating and relationships, which many people on social media felt were an attack on black women, often sparked outrage. So that goes back to what Timon was saying. You know, because some folks felt like, as I said before, they felt like he should not be able to have a blog. He should not be able to post in this and the other. But a lot of people embraced his views. Now, I looked at some of them, and I look at a lot of viewpoints from different people. And as a radio host, a show host, I have to look at it. I have to read it. Whether I agree with them or not, you know, that's their view. And I will openly say, well, I don't agree with them. But, you know, that's your point. I mean, that's how you feel? Fine. I'm not going to, you know, beat you down about it. That's how you feel? Fine. Have a nice day. But what you brought up, the fact that here he was, you know, really covering up his addiction, basically, and then we find him dead, right? And then he was not being really honest with his 1.4 million subscribers. Am I right?
Well, yep. But well, Mike, you can add to that. What sells reality TV?
Correct.
He sold you conflict. Because without conflict, none of those reality TV shows work. You've got to show them battling all the time. So to keep up the lie, can you imagine what he had, what it was like to live with himself, of what he said to people? Huh?
No, I'm following you.
Can you imagine what it's like to live with yourself every night as you sit up and say the most insulting things, and then people, that shows you where their ignorance is. I agree with him. I agree with what he's saying. It's 100%. It's blah, 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 blah. And it's like,
yes.
Minute,
you'd be surprised how many people co-sign on blame and shame, especially if it's a black person talking about another black person. Yes.
Oh, yeah. He stirred the pot. Mm-hmm. Now, you can probably say, you know, even in my stand-up, I talk about the issues of life, the issues of children and everything else. But I can take that same conversation. I can put it in front of white folks because they relate. I can put it in front of black folks because they relate. Mm-hmm. But I am talking from basically my experiences of working in the juvenile justice system, working with different parents and dealing with different, and my own personal life. But to sit up and put together something that you knew you planned on insulting black women and bringing them down and talking about them to the point that you would do it so you can make money, and then all of a sudden you can support your cocaine habit with it, and you also are sleeping with prostitutes.
He's a fraud.
Come on, man. Come on now. You can't. You could live with
quintessential con man fraud.
There you go.
He was a con man and a fraud.
There you go. Yep. And he got exposed.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Especially if you're doing cocaine at 57 years old, you still doing cocaine, man, your heart is screaming. Your heart is like, oh, bro, please don't stick me another, give me another snort of that, bro. Your nose and I already told you, man, don't you put that in me, man. You know, last time. You know, and the heart can talk to the brain, and brain and I mean, your body's talking to you, man. They telling you, man, look, we you gonna go have some sex too? Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
And then you didn't even get.
Yeah, because I think he had Viagra too. There's some reports that say he had Viagra too. He had ingested some Viagra.
Okay, so he's doing a cocktail there. He's doing a hell of a cocktail there. He's doing a hell of a cocktail. And your nose is saying, hey, man, do you realize I have less hairs than your damn head? Okay? I mean, I'm losing my hairs here. You snorting
this too
much.
He probably got to the point in his life where he felt he was invincible. I mean, that happens. You know? It basically went to his head.
So...
That's a good point.
His mouth made him $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hey, you guys, the time is now 6:35. We have about 25 minutes before we get into the other topics on the show. But, you know, for the past few weeks, the past few shows other than last week, we've never really taken a music break because the topics have been so interesting. So we've just been going and going and going. But today I want to take a couple of music breaks and then come back with another topic. And then at the top of the hour, we're going to get into the meat of the topics for today's show, okay? We have 2 hours to burn. So But last week, we had a great guest. And if you guys missed it, you missed a great conversation with Mr. Corey D. Williams, the son of the legendary, iconic actor, Mr. Billy D. Williams, joined us last week. Yes. Janet, was that not a great conversation? I mean, that was awesome.
It was awesome. Awesome.
Great guy.
He was very talkative. He was really engaged in everything that we talked about.
Yeah. And I'm so blessed to call him a friend. He calls me a friend. And I'm glad that he posted on social media that, hey, look, appreciate you, Mike, having me on the show, because he's never done that. It was the first time he's actually done an interview. And I had been trying to get him on for maybe, 5 or 6 years. But I've been trying to get him on for like 5 or 6 years. And finally he came on. And he's going to be joining us again in the not-too-distant future.
But
if you missed it,
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. For someone who didn't really want to talk about his father, he really talked about his dad, you know. So, and we learned a lot from him.
Well, that was the game plan when we talked beforehand. That was the game plan because I said, well, look, you know, folks are going to ask about your dad and want to know about your dad. I mean, that's automatic. He said, you know what, I don't have a problem with that. But that's what we planned out, is let's talk about your dad in the first part, which we did, and then move on to what he does, which he's a writer, producer, musician, okay? You know, he's his own man. So it went, you know, as planned. So that was fantastic, and I really do appreciate it. So without further ado, let's take a quick music break, and let's go back to last week and just play one of his tracks, and then we'll come back and get into more conversation before the top of the hour, where we're going to have former attorney Mr. Lyle Dixon is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. But here's Corey D. Williams from one of his projects. I really love his music, and you could check it out on Spotify, also on SoundCloud, and I'll share the information, okay? We'll be right back. You're listening to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, on the TMGN, the Michael Gay Network.
Yeah.
Welcome back to TMGS. You're tuned into the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL. My co-host, Janet Davis. Of course, Time and Ship. And Officer Crenshaw, you still there? Yeah, Officer Crenshaw and a guest, former co-host, and I'm glad that she joined us, the one and only Dr. Cynthia Elise Smith. Thank you guys for tuning in. And that was Corey D. Williams, and that's called Cast Adrift. Now, I know Blog Talk doesn't do the sound justice, so you can go to SoundCloud, and that track is on the Sonic Bionic project. And then he has another one called 3D Nucleus that has a lot of great stuff. Interesting guy. Interesting guy. Wouldn't you agree? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Everybody got quiet.
I think it was good. I don't think that my speaker, I mean, my earphone didn't do it justice. So I'm definitely going to get on SoundCloud so I can hear it. I can hear it better.
Oh, yeah. Blog Talk and the things that when I play songs on here, that's how come I'm looking at elevating the show. And by the way, I think I mentioned in June, we have a new show that's starting. So we're going to elevate the show where we're going to have it work in a better quality sound. Trust me. I know I've been talking about it, but it's coming. Please bear with me. It's coming where you can definitely hear it. And it's great sound. But, yeah, go to SoundCloud and pull this music up. Play it on in your headphones, in your earbuds, on your home systems. You're going to love it. There's so much in this music, so many percussions in there that you'll be like, wow, you know, very creative. Okay, so time is now 6:43, and let me look at our itinerary. Janet, what have I missed here? Let me go back and see here.
Well, like I said, Crenshaw earlier mentioned the woman who was she was a guard.
She was a correction officer, right. That's interesting. Now, they both have the same last name, and I have not got a confirmation. Were they related or not, or was it just a coincidence?
Well, at first they said they weren't related.
No, they're not supposed to be related.
But
right.
They have the same last name.
She had been seeing him for a few years, so they might have gotten married. Because all this
you know what? That's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's very possible. That's probable.
Yeah.
I mean, because then it would at least make it make a little more sense.
Yeah. Well,
right.
She left the prison with only her, no other person with her, and he was in shackles. But then, you know, if all this was planned, as far as getting in another car, and I mean, you know, so they're probably long gone because at first they thought maybe she was being held hostage someplace.
Okay, so let's get into this thing. There's still a search for Vicky White and what's the gentleman's name? I'm trying to pull up his name. But just happened to have the same last name. So like you said, they could have gotten married. Wouldn't that, I mean, as a correctional facility, if they got married after he was behind bars, okay, wouldn't that be some bells and whistles to the facility itself that why is one of our officers marrying an inmate? You follow what I'm asking?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there are individuals.
Right.
There are individuals who got married to murderers, right? There are individuals who wanted to marry Charles Manson and everything, but they didn't work for the facility. So wouldn't that kind of like throw up a red light or something of where if they were not married prior to him being incarcerated and then they got married after he was incarcerated, wouldn't that be a conflict in a sense, or wouldn't the facility, the correctional department?
I mean, you would think.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's what I'm
asking. Another prison.
And by him being a prisoner, the prison would have to be aware that they got married. So
thank you. I would have been like, whoa, wait a minute. You marry a bad one.
Yeah, the likelihood that they're not married, it's possible, but it's not, I don't know. At first I was saying it could be probable, but then, when you really think about it, yeah, the prison would be aware. But, I mean, then you think about a prison that would be that lax. that they would even let it happen. It makes you wonder, like, okay, maybe they're that lax that they got married and it slipped through the cracks. Maybe they changed.
So
maybe they had high turnover, and maybe they have a high turnover with the wardens or people, and they weren't aware.
Hold tight for a minute. I just want to say this, and then I think it was Timon who was trying to say something. But I just want to share this just real briefly. Back in the 80s, when I worked for, what was it? Big Ben's Records, which later on became Warehouse Music. There was a guy who was a manager in training, and there was a young lady who was a cashier. They struck up a relationship. The company, we're talking about a company. We're not talking about law enforcement. The company said, whoa, wait a minute. You can't have that happening. You both cannot work in the same location. Okay? There's a conflict there. They said either one of you all got to relocate, which, of course, the manager was not going to relocate because he was in training at that point to become a store manager. She wound up having to relocate to another store. They could, which goes back to the fact of where you cannot manage your peers.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? You can't be the manager over, I'm saying you can't have a relationship with your peers, someone that you are an authority to on the job. Okay, so she transferred to another store. Now, fast forward to what we're talking about. How the hell can she be a correctional officer and married to an inmate and no one questions that? How come she was allowed to continue to be at that facility overseeing her husband, allegedly husband, and I don't know if that's a fact, but if it was, how did that happen? Now, I think it was Timon who was about to chime in.
Well,
Timon, is that you? Okay. No, go ahead. I think it was good.
So, can I talk?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, she saw him and she started seeing him in 2020. It was another prison. And so maybe that's why they didn't put the two and two together. But she sold her home and did a lot of things before this happened. It was all pre-planned. She said she had announced that she was going to retire, so she had put in for that. She sold her home for over $95,000. She had a different car, so and all the guns and everything that she had, that was hers, personally hers, I'm assuming this relationship had been going on for a while and she did it on her non-working hours, they say.
And she sold a house that was worth $100,000 for $95,000. That should have been a hint and a half, but go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they weren't married. They just struck up a relationship in 2020, and he basically brainwashed her and ran off. They just happened to have the same last name. If they had have gotten married, like you said, the bells and whistles would have went off because she would have had to change all her documentation through HR, naming the spouse and everything else. And it's no way they would have let him from one prison get married without acknowledging who he was married to, transferring him to another prison to where his wife worked at. So they're on their way to Tennessee in the mountains somewhere right now hiding. And they might
get off the grid
right now.
Tennessee mountains, huh?
You can look at her picture and tell that, she just fell for the okie-doke. The look in her eyes was like, I'm missing love.
Well, but the thing is that now that's interesting what Officer Crenshaw just said, but we cannot throw out the fact that there might be some other people involved in this, because look at how smooth they did it. And still to this day, they haven't found it. I mean, she's very, I mean, to be honest, I don't condone the stuff, but sometimes you have to look at it like, wow, that's pretty creative. That's ingenious.
Well, she made sure she came to, said she had to take him to the courthouse after the other officers had already left. So she was the only one left that could take him there. But she had planted her car 10 minutes away where she can just, they could just get in it and go. You know,
right.
And so
well, I saw a video where I saw a video where they a guy allegedly had to be wheelchaired to the courthouse, an inmate. He's in the wheelchair. They get on the ramp, and the ramp goes up at an angle, and there's like a little railing there that has a drop of about maybe 6 feet or so. He jumps out the wheelchair and jumps over the rail and takes off. The sheriff didn't have his walkie-talkie. Officer Crenshaw, you've seen this, right? Didn't have his walkie, so he couldn't call for backup. So that is that sheriff's fault, because he didn't have a walkie, and the dude just disappeared, you know? So there's some plotting. In my mind, looking at it, for these two to be on the run this long, I believe they had some assistance. I think there was some help. And I think when they finally find them.
She might already be dead.
You think she's dead? What?
I think he might have killed her. Yeah. I don't, yeah. And he was on death row.
Well,
you can tell he's already a killer.
Well, the thing is, what I want to ask you is this. You believe that he convinced her to help him escape and then looked at, well, I'm going to kill her, you know, regardless. Or
yeah, get out of the way. You know, that's a wild, you know, she probably will become a liability.
Yep.
Well, that's a good point, too. You know,
she'd slow him down.
So you're thinking about that she really didn't know what was going on.
She served her purpose. Because, you know, if he's on death row for killing people and whatnot, he's probably either a sociopath or out-and-out psychopath. So, you know, they use people. And they're very, very crafty when it comes to convincing people. You know, when it suits them and their goal, you know, their aim. And it would seem to me that, you know, as somebody who just would use, you know, he would make her think that he loves her and everything, you know, just to get her to do what it was he needed to get done. And then after that, her purpose is served. Okay. You know, I don't see where he might not. I mean, I don't see where he would keep her necessarily once she served her purpose.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Right. And I get what you're saying. That's an interesting take on it, of where she did commit the crime of release. If you think about the movie, I don't have to go way back in time, but look at Black Panther. Look at the movie where the one who came back, you know, to try to claim the throne, right? Killmonger. He had the girlfriend. He sacrificed her, right? Remember that scene?
Mm-hmm.
He said, that's okay. He shot her. So that's a good
point. Well, they claim she was the most solid.
I watch a lot of Investigation Discovery.
That's interesting.
I watch a lot of ID.
Yeah, I do too. In fact, I watch real.
They claim she was a very solid person. So they just can't believe that any of this happened. Because they said she was the most solid person at the facility.
She got in the vernacular of the streets. She got dick whipped.
Let me let Simon. So Simon has been a little quiet there. I want to give Simon a chance to. Simon just dropped. I was trying to give him a chance to chime in on this conversation. Hopefully he'll call back in. You know, Simon normally only has about an hour with us because, of course, he's a busy man. He performs. And all right, so I'm looking to see if our guest has joined us yet. In fact, he knows to join us at 7 o'clock. But, yeah, that is definitely a crazy situation. I want to hold this conversation until the next hour when our guest joins us, but I want to go ahead and start it. This detrimental Janet, let's take a look at a couple of things. I want to hold on to the other stories for later on, but this whole thing with the Johnny Depp case and Amanda Heard, I've seen people on social media say, who gives a shit, right, about them? They're both millionaires. Who gives a shit about them suing each other over millions? Now, I looked up where allegedly Johnny Depp has lost over $360 million, okay? And right now, he's still worth like $300 million. None of us here talking has $300 million, correct? If we had $1 million, I think all of us would be okay, correct? But this is an actor, both of them are actors, and this is a he said, she said, he did, she did case. It's going on. It's been a month. Most murder cases, many murder cases, don't even take a month. Many of them are done within 2 to 3 weeks. Am I right? Yes, I am. Many.
Well, his wife just took the witness stand this week. So
but what I'm saying, but look at how long it's been, and it still isn't over. This whole thing has been a month so far over he said, she said. Let me ask you guys a question. Are you following this trial, and is it interesting to you, and does it really matter?
No.
It's
theater. It's a reality show.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's theater. It's all it is.
But I understand why he's doing it.
And it's a good distraction from everything that's really going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he says that his career has been damaged because of it. He can't do any more movies with Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let Officer Pinshaw finish out. Why do you understand that, sir?
Well, because as police officers, when people defame us, you know, we could take them to court and try to sue them for defamation, but we're not going to get anything out of it. If he doesn't stop that defamation now, it's going to continue on and on and on. He can go and make more money, just probably not with Disney and all of them.
Right.
So he's not doing it for the money. It's the cause behind it that he's doing it for.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we would have people lie on us and say we did this and did that, we go through this big investigation. It turns out to where we didn't do it. But if we try to take the person to civil court, you know, you can't squeeze shit out of a lemon. You're just going to get a couple of little small seeds. So, you know, we're not getting anything. We're spending more money trying to do it. At least he's teaching them a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just can't say what you want to say about anybody or anything.
Yeah.
And that's why I think with this, all that, and it's probably one of your topics, Trump and all of them are doing is going to add up and end up in civil court where they can be sued as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, again, like I said, I've seen and I've looked at on social media, a lot of folks don't give a damn about this whole case. But, you know, as Dr. Smith said, there's no interest and on her behalf, you know, and I agree with you, but sometimes, you know, I look at some of the testimony every now and then, but I'm like, okay, what does this jury have to work with? It's his word against her word. How do you make a decision? Because here's a counter lawsuit on her behalf. And it's where, you know, there's video of stuff and everything that she did, and Oh, okay, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I just got a text from him. Hold on, I just got to text my mom. Lyle.
While
you're and so,
reading that, I'm gonna say this, Mike. You also got to look at the fact that he's a great actor. So is he not acting while testifying?
Well, she's an actor too.
You can make
she's an actor too.
Make it all believable. You know. So who do you really believe in all of this?
Right.
So like Dr. said, it's a reality soap opera show, you know, to where it's a distraction from everything else that's really going on. Because if it's true, if it's true and he's being defamed, I understand. But if it's just, well, let me show you another side of my acting abilities and, you know, and try to convince the jury off a lie, it's just a big distraction. So it really doesn't matter because they got millions.
Okay, anybody want to respond to that? Anybody? Nope. Okay. no, I'm assuming what you just said, but it's just interesting to me that here's a case, you know, that's going on for months, and I would not want to be on this jury. I'm just being honest. I would not want to be on this jury because I don't know if you guys saw the video, but someone shared on social media a clip of in the courtroom where Amber Heard has two bottles in her hand. Okay? Two bottles in her hand. One looks like maybe a juice or something. The other one looks like water. You know, vodka and gin looks like water. Anyway. So she sets one bottle of the juice-looking one. She sets it down, and then she starts to unscrew the cap on the one that looks like water. And then she kind of looks over to her right, and then she starts to screw the cap back on and slips it into her suit pocket, because he has on like a pantsuit, and drops it into his suit pocket. Now think about what I just said. She starts to unscrew it. She looks to her right, and then she screws it back on, and then she pops it into a pocket. And here's a correctional officer or courtroom officer walks by and then look at her gesture where she kind of like looks down in a sense of like, is this well hidden? Kind of like puts her hands up like, I don't have anything on me type look. That's kind of questionable. Has anybody ever seen that clip? Jenny, have you seen that?
No, but I tell you one thing. I saw a clip. It was funny. There was a clip of her on Twitter. Looked like she was snorting something out of a tissue. Now that one was like, I had to watch that like three times. And I said, oh, my God, she literally had something in that tissue that she snorted. And that was what the person was saying as a commentary to the video. And, I mean, it really looked like she was snorting something in the tissue. You know how, like, if somebody is snorting something, and then when they get done, they gotta rub their nose a little bit at them? She just looked like, oh, my God, if you really got it that bad, then you got to do it like that in the courtroom, visibly.
The video,
well, you know,
she was steady crying. And all I could think of was Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, putting the act on for the jury, you know, because she was sobbing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, look, you guys, hold on. I have to cut short just a minute here because our guest has arrived. And like I said, he's not going to give you any advice per se, but he's going to give us a little understanding of what the law says and a little bit of his understanding of what, you know, he sees and maybe his opinions, and that's how come I like when he comes on. This is his second time on. So you guys, please welcome former attorney, Mr. Lyle Dixon is joining us right now. Please put your hands together and welcome Lyle back again. Hello, Lyle. How you doing, my brother?
Hey. Hello there. Hey.
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you, Chad. Thank you, Chad. Thank you. See you, Addie. Thank you.
Thank you, Sudo. Thank you. He's here. He's here. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I said thank you. Stop, you guys.
Thank you. Okay. Sorry, Lyle. Welcome back to the show, man. I'm sorry. They get, you know, they get so excited when you come here. But anyway, welcome back to the studio.
I can see why, and I'm sorry for my technical difficulties on my end at the beginning here.
Thank you for joining us, and we just got started talking about actually the case here with the death, the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard situation, and you know the whole thing about you know having someone say, oh, well, you ruined my career, okay, this and the other. But you brought to my attention something that's interesting, which I want you to share that with the listeners. But this case has been going on for a month now. And as I said to my co-hosts and the other listeners, there's a lot of folks who just don't give a damn about this case. But is it really important for folks to pay attention to something like this when it's between two millionaires? Because I looked at where Johnny Depp might have lost $360 million, but he's still worth $200-something million. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I guess when you're dealing with two dysfunctional individuals, one is obviously a abuser of substances, and the other one has severe psychological issues, it would appear, based upon what I've seen on the testimony, who really cares?
Hello.
Unfortunately, there are people who love to get into abusive relationships, and they thrive on them. And from what I have seen, both of them appear to fit that.
Right.
So, again, how much money do you really need to live on?
Good point.
That's what I
ask. Thank you. Wow, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. That's true. Because if you take your money and
it's a case study in codependency.
Right. If you invest,
absolutely.
You know, yeah. If you're going to get interest off your money. If you invest, then fine. But that's a good question. How much money do you need to live on? You know, he might have lost. Well, thing is, they said he squandered off $360 million in 13 years. That's what,
and it all probably went up his nose.
That's a possibility too, right? $360 million he squandered off, and we're not a Johnny Depp. We are not actors, okay? We're everyday people, but it's amazing how folks. And I'm looking at you know, and I have to do it, you know, as a radio show host. I have to kind of like, and Janet does it too, follow what's going on. You know, we do that just to look at the stupidity. In a sense, there's people who are staying outside the court house trying to get a seat to hear this testimony when they can stay home and watch it on TV to say I was there. But what's your thoughts as far as seeing what they showed as far as the video of him destroying the kitchen, this and the other, her doing this and the other, when it comes to detrimental of character? What's your thought as far as what you shared with me already, how often are these cases successful for the person who has put forward the charge?
Well, I'm a firm believer that they are utilizing the concept of any press is good press, even if it makes them both look like complete idiots. and I think this does. In regards to how often these cases resolve themselves. Obviously, this one hasn't. It's already made it through a few motions for summary disposition, I think, on both sides. I know she just lost her motion for summary disposition last week, which means the case would have been dismissed, which means looking at all the evidence most favorable in the light of the opposing party, the case wasn't dismissed. But the thing is, though, even though this is a high-profile case, as I mentioned to you before, there's several of these cases that actually go on that you may not even know about. And ironically, you are probably covered for defamation of character if you own a home and have homeowner's insurance or renter's insurance, because that's one of the clauses that they actually cover you for in your homeowner's policy. And take a look at it, at your policy, and you'll see that it's not a totally uncommon type of situation, but it's essentially one that I think a lot of lawyers won't handle, because essentially you're looking at, oh, did you hurt my feelings? And all my feelings got hurt. So as a result of that, I'm going to sue you. And as I mentioned, to you before, when I talked to you a while ago, it seems as though a lot of these cases, or at least it's becoming more and more prevalent, when somebody gives a company a bad review, such as on Yelp or some of these other websites, the company says, oh, you hurt my feelings, and so now I'm going to sue you. The one particular case that I mentioned to you that I handled was an auto repair shop that did a lousy job fixing a client's car. And so they sued for the cost of the repairs to get that back under a lemon law. And they countersued her, my particular client, for defamation, because she put a bad review on Yelp. And that definitely increased the cost of litigation, because now instead of just prosecuting a case, you're now defending a defamation case.
Right. Wow. And I found that interesting, you guys. I mean, you heard what he just said. So when you want to sit up there, and I look at folks who go into, you know, stores and be like, I'm going to sue Walmart. I'm going to sue Home Depot. I'm going to sue Lowe's and everything. Remember, they have like 10 or 15 lawyers. Okay? Remember that. You got one. Well, let's say this first. You don't have one yet. You're going to look for one to, you know, represent you for some folks. But I see where folks, you know, cry lawsuit. You got to realize who you're going up against. Corporate America. And they can draw that case out longer than your money is. Right? Am I right, Lyle?
Oh, absolutely. They have deep pockets, but that's initially why most people go after the large corporations anyway, because they've got the money. And they've got more than 10 or 15 lawyers, Walmart and such. I can guarantee you it's probably up in the hundreds, if not thousands, of lawyers.
Lots of them. Right.
Whole law firms. Yeah.
You're right.
I'm sure they have their own legal advice.
Right. So if you don't mind, I want to go ahead and let my co-hosts and callers ask you a few questions. And, of course, like I already said, that you're not giving them legal advice, but just giving your opinion and everything. Janet, if you want to go first, do you have any questions or comments for Lyle?
Yes, I was on mute. Lyle, you answered a question I had, because I was going to do a real bad review for my primary care doctor, because I'm still having issues from her as far as my health. And someone said, well, be careful, because she might sue you for defamation of character. So I took a second thought and said, well, maybe, but even though I know I got proof, I have proof, but I don't have the money to be paying for a whole lot of legal fees. And she's a doctor, you know, but she's no longer she's no longer on my insurance group. So I just decided not to pursue it. Yeah. So,
well,
you
that's probably
that question.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad thing, especially obviously somebody else must have thought the same thing you did. That's why they've been removed from your program.
Right.
But you got to remember, truth is a defense to defamation, and that's what's going on with the Johnny Depp case. She's saying, hey, I was truthful, and he's saying, no, you weren't. So it is a complete defense. But when you start getting into companies and things like that, and you start attacking somebody's business or their ability to make income, then you have what we call defamation per se. That means it's automatically defamatory unless you can prove that it's not. So then the burden kind of switches around a little bit there.
Okay.
Okay. Let me go ahead to Officer Crenshaw. No, I'm sorry. Officer Crenshaw, hold tight for a minute. Because I did ask Dr. Cynthia Lee Smith to join us, and in a moment we're going to get into the other topics. Okay. Dr. Smith, do you have any questions or comments?
Well, hi, first of all, how are you? I wanted to talk to you about how the difference, people need to understand the difference between rights and laws. And because I recently posted on my platform that, you know, rights are embedded in the Constitution, laws mm-hmm. are created in Congress, and none of the laws on the books come from the Constitution. They come from Congress.
And penal codes, right, exactly. That's interesting.
And the court simply interprets the Constitution when justifying, legitimizing, or when invalidating or disproving the laws created by Congress. But, you know, because there seems to be a lot of, would that be correct?
Except for the parts where you say the courts simply interpret the Constitution, as we can see what's happened over the last week, it's not as simple as it looks, because, say, the Supreme Court has a long history, say, of 50 years of interpreting a particular law a certain way, and then all of a sudden the makeup of the court changes, and then all of a sudden 50 years of precedence has gone down the toilet, which is what's going
right.
on right now.
So right. Not that simple. Exactly. Exactly. Which is going on right now. Yes. Yeah. Because now it's kind of morphed into them actually changing law when they weren't.
Well,
they're not supposed to be changing law.
Well, you think
right?
you know what the law is, so you abide by what you think the law is, only to find out, well, they changed the law. The interpretation
yes.
of the law has
exactly.
now changed.
Right,
so,
right, and that's what I said.
What
I was saying, like in, I was likening it to, you know, their interpretation of what they consider is your rights, and when, you know, the laws that you abide by, which may or may not include your constitutional rights on any given judicial cycle, if they decide to change that through change the precedent, like what in fact is a. I mean, I know what a precedent is supposed to be, but that's supposed to be the first thing, you know, that first time. And so every subsequent law is supposed to abide by that, or is that not it? I know it's more complicated than that.
Well, that's an easy version of how to define precedents. It's supposed to be something that's what we call black letter law, that you can see the law and you know what to do and you know how to react to it. But then all of a sudden somebody throws a monkey wrench into the middle of the process and they change the precedents on a 5-4 vote when they even indicated, say, during their hearings that, oh, no, precedence has been well established in this one particular area.
Mm-hmm.
And they are really, really opening up a slippery slope right now.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
yes.
with that. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's
okay,
funny.
So
hold tight
just a moment, because I definitely want. I mean, I know we have about maybe 40 minutes left, so I want to make sure everybody has a chance to ask their questions and everything. But one thing is about you said black letter law. I want to come back to you. What do you mean by black letter law? Okay.
You well,
know, there's a
ink
lot
is of black.
Okay.
Ink is black, and you look
yet.
At the law.
Uh-huh.
Ink is black, and when it's written on a piece of paper, it's called black letter law. It's like you read it. It means what it means. It means what it says, and that's that.
Okay,
but apparently
I'm just joking. But that's a term that is used, though, right? It's written
yeah,
in ink. It's the law, right?
That's legal terminology.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've never heard that term, but I appreciate that you shared that.
I want to move on and get to other folks that have some questions and comments. Officer Crenshaw, do you have a question or a comment for our guest?
Well, yeah. Public servants and defamation. What's the difference between, because like Johnny Depp and his wife are both actors and actresses versus me being a retired police officer, it's harder for me to sue for defamation than it is for them. I know they have more money, but wouldn't the bottom line actually be the same if it's involving the truth? And then I have one other question about black letter law.
Well, in regards to your first question, first of all, thank you for your service. I'm also a retired policeman from Detroit area. So I do appreciate, and I know what you've gone through your entire career. And actually, when I was in the Army, they sent me to the Savannah, Georgia Police Academy
Ooh-ah!
Back in the late 70s. So I was a Georgia post officer there for a while. But anyways, in regards to rights, your rights are the same, supposedly, whether you have money or not, pursuant to the Constitution. Remember, all men are created equal, but it doesn't say anything about women.
Right.
I always found interesting. But apparently,
right.
Women's rights are not created equal currently, the way it looks like it's going in the U.S., and that's really, really unfortunate. That's crazy. So as a former police officer, yeah, you have just as much rights as anybody else. I do know that at least in some of the states that I was a police officer in, that say you got injured on the job, you couldn't necessarily sue for things that occurred while you were working because it was covered by workers' comp or some other type of statutory concept that precluded you from doing that. Does that answer your question?
Yes, because I had a situation where a guy I worked with actually, you know, well, we're always getting blamed for something, which is, you know, truth, non-truth, but he was actually injured and tried to sue the family of the person that injured him, and no attorney would take him. So, yes and
was,
no.
Was he out?
Black letter law.
Was he out?
Go ahead.
Was he on the job as a police officer?
Yes.
Well, there might be some state statute, wherever that happened at, that might have precluded it. I know I spent most of my career in Michigan, and there were state statutes that precluded that with a few exceptions, such as
right. He was shot in the face and his partner was killed. And even though workers' comp and, you know, his medical took care of everything, he tried to go back and sue the family of the guy that shot him, and no attorney would take it. Because I don't know if it was because they were prosecuting him criminally anyway, but he was trying to sue on that behalf. But on black letter law, you said it's written in black ink and it's interpreted as is. But why is it that the interpretation gets twisted and turned depending on the client to mean other things? If it's written down in black ink, thou shalt not commit murder, and then it gets twisted to where, well, he committed this because of...
In a court of law,
right?
Well, again, there are states that I'm familiar with that have, in Michigan, I believe they call it the firefighter's clause, which pertains to police officers. So if you're hurt on the job, you know, your remedies are limited by law to workers' comp and maybe a couple other things out there. And I'm not familiar specifically with Georgia or a lot of the other states, but you got to remember, as they've been saying a lot lately, elections matter. And if you elect a really set of bad judges and they happen to be on a state or federal court of appeals or in the Supreme Court for your state or for the feds, you know, bad law is going to come out of that.
Right.
Right.
And the thing is that I want to intervene for a moment there. Thank you, Lyle, for the fact that you explained that. You know, state by state is different. So what happens here in Georgia may not be the same in California. So let's keep that in mind when you ask your questions. You know, laws are different. If you look at the situation now, as we just mentioned earlier in the show, about the Supreme Court dealing with the Roe versus Wade, which we're going to get into that briefly, but keep in mind that it's a phase where it's going to be a state by state. It's not just your state. You know, states are going to have a choice. I see that I have a hand up, and I do believe this is Simon calling back in to the show, one of our co-hosts. I'm going to go ahead and open up his mic and see if he has a question or comment. It seemed like he was
I can't talk to you, Mike, because I'm on the road, so I'm going to just listen.
Oh, okay. So you were okay. Well, you waved your hand, but I'll just go ahead and mute you and let you still be on the show. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. All right. So did I miss anybody? Did I get everybody with their questions and comments? I got time and everything. Okay, wait a minute. There's someone down here. If you want to comment, if you have a question or comment, I see some other folks here on the board. Wave your hand if you want to join the conversation. Let's move on to Roe versus Wade. What I find interesting is because we're at the bottom of the hour, and so we need to go ahead and talk about this. And everybody's point of view is well taken. And I don't want anybody at all to get into no conflict over each individual's opinion. But here we go, right? According to what I've read, 29% of Americans want Roe versus Wade overturned. All right. I'm going to say on my behalf, when Texas did what it did, I found what I felt was wrong. Here's a bunch of men are deciding for women. I think that's wrong. Okay? I'm going to say it. You know, a decision that a woman has to take. No man on this earth will ever have to experience giving birth to a child, especially if it's a child that she did not want to have through incest or rape, okay? That's my opinion, all right? It's none of my business what somebody else does. My son, yeah, he's alive and well. He has two kids, all right? I had individuals who said that his mother and I should abort him, but we chose not to. But we could have if we wanted to, but we didn't. So for someone to make a decision for us or tell us to do something, we did not do it. It was our choice. And it's a little bit deeper than that because, I mean, I don't want to go into it because I look at just the world as a whole, society as a whole. The laws as a whole. I think that this is going to be very interesting how this court makes a decision, especially when you have majority men making a decision about a woman's decision. And then if it goes to the states, you know most of your southern states are going to be, nope, can't do it. Who's going to take care of these kids? We already have this argument of, well, you know, all these women having babies and you need to think about having a child before you bring a child into this world. Can you support them? Who's going to support the children? You, the taxpayers. That's my opinion. So that's all I want to share right now. But I want to go ahead and go to Dr. Smith. I want her to share I want her to share this.
Some of my insight as an anti-racism and white supremacism educator.
hold on for a moment, Dr. Smith. I want you to share what you said that you wrote, and I want you to go ahead and share it. And then after that, then I want everyone to respond to what you wrote and also their points of view.
Oh, you want me to read the essay?
Well, actually, first of all, before you read the essay, yeah, I want you to do it. Hopefully it's not too long, but I want you to do it.
No, it's only about 3 minutes.
Okay. So I want you to read the essay, yes. I want you to share that. That's how come I want you on the show, because I know you read some interesting stuff. Thought-provoking, right? So, yeah, I want you to read the essay, but I want to, in fact, go ahead and read it first, and then let's get back to the host and our guest.
Okay. Well, the essay is entitled Unveiling the Threats, the Supreme Court Metastasized Supremacism, and Saying It Out Loud. We knew for months that the Supreme Court, as constituted in 2022, was poised to overturn Roe versus Wade, the judicial ruling that essentially gave agency to women to control whether they gave birth. Now, in an unprecedented leak from directly inside the halls of the Supreme Court, a preliminary decision confirms what we knew, and indeed, although known, the shockwaves are nevertheless reverberating all over the country. To read my essays, no, this essay is not just about Roe versus Wade or women's rights. This essay is also about what no one, and I mean no one, will say out loud, not the media, not the pundits, not the politicians, and not the people at the water coolers, hallways, or desks surrounded by cubicles in corporate America. Will this country repeat the latest attempt at deconstructing reconstruction? Roe versus Wade was undoubtedly the grapes on the vine and not the apples high on the branches. This is not to say a woman's right to abortion wasn't as consistently attacked as rights for black people in recent history. There is only the timing. 49 years of threat is considerably shorter than 145 years. Both, however, are nonetheless in real jeopardy. But Roe versus Wade is what they are willing and able to say out loud. Yet through the deafening sounds of outrage over the leak at the Supreme Court, there is that familiar, raucous silence permeating the air. Of all the rights that are mentioned being at risk, there is absolutely no specific mention of the rights of black people in this country, even as these rights have been consistently threatened since the enslavement ended. Here's what I'm hearing. This is only the beginning. Next, they will be going after contraception. This is a potential danger for the rights of all Americans. It won't stop here. Where will they go next? LGBTQ rights. Other rights. These, among other things which sound the nation's alarm, and rightly so, indicate the Supreme Court is now captured by the same ideology which informed Adolf Hitler in his treatment of Jewish people and the other in Europe back in the 1930s. Think not. All you have to do is listen and read what is being said and written by people who identify as Republican, the political party of which the majority of the Supreme Court are a part. So I'm sounding the alarm now, as I always do, whether it is seen as hyperbole or fear-mongering or any other naysay that can be produced when it comes to the rights of black people in this country. If the upsurge of white supremacist violence, the extent of voter suppression, and the direct assault on the lives of black people in this country by local and state police violence aren't a valid indicator of viable threats, then what exactly are? Why are these threats still being shrouded as though the same Supreme Court would never do what this country's history has shown time and time again they have done in the past and could do in the future? What is it about the rights of black people that it cannot be mentioned directly, but veiled behind the rights of other protected classes that are spoken of out loud? Why has it been for at least 50 years so taboo to attribute all of the white supremacist threats to every other group but the very ones for whom the terror, violence, and subjugation has been a consistent theme? Why even mention white supremacists if the threat isn't about race? This obvious metastasizing of the white supremacism in the Supreme Court is certainly genuine enough at this point in our history to at least realize the threat is no longer veiled, but a possibility and will be a probability if the autocracy created by the Republicans succeed and democracy ends. But what in this so-called inclusivity of included protected classes of people in this country will it take to say, black people, you in trouble too, to be spoken as loudly as the right to an abortion or same-sex marriage? Well, I'm saying it out loud. Someone's got to. Roe versus Wade is just a beginning, but black people, you in trouble too. That's it.
All right. Let's
Hello?
Take a quick music break. And when we
that
come
was
back,
great.
That was great. But
Excuse
let's
me?
Take a quick music break. No, that was fantastic. When we come back, I'm going to take a quick music break. And when we come back, we're going to let everybody chime in on what you just read. And then, of course, thanks to my guest, Mr. Lyle Dixon, let him chime in on that. And we'll be right back. I apologize. That was a little fun, but here we go.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Right on.
Welcome back to TMGS. You're listening to the Michael Kay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks to the one and only Dr. Cynthia Lee Smith. Dr. Smith, that was awesome. The reading that you
Thank you.
Your, was awesome. So I didn't mute anybody. Thank God. I didn't have to mute anybody to play the music, but I think it was very appropriate to play a classic from Marvin Gaye of what's going on. I'm sorry. I got a lot of company in my house, actually, and I have to pull myself into the other room. There's a little gathering here. But they know what I do every Saturday. So hold on a minute. I'm sorry. Someone just texted me. Okay. Lyle, are you there?
I am.
Okay. What did you think about what Dr. Smith just read?
Well, besides being a lawyer, my PhD is in sociology. And I find that I can't necessarily agree 100% with her interpretation. Mm-hmm. It seems as though she's attempting to couch it in a black-white issue. I think it's more mm-hmm. of a conservative versus progressive liberal issue because if you think about it, if this opinion is true, you know, Roe v. Wade is going to be negated on a 5-4 vote, and the swing vote is from a black man, Clarence Thomas.
Right.
So that's why I'm looking at more of a conservative, progressive, liberal type situation. I don't necessarily think it's a black-white issue. So in that respect, I would disagree.
Okay, and everybody has their opinion, so that's cool. And you know what? I have to be honest. I think it is, in my opinion, when I look at folks that I work with and their responses and everything, it's not a black and white thing anymore. It's about party, you know, lines, you know, who you believe. You know?
You can't. Okay, I have to interject here only because if that was the case, then what? Excuse me.
Well. No, I can hear you, but the thing is that I want you to go ahead and respond,
okay.
But if
okay.
you can,
no, go ahead. I won't retort.
Okay, because I got some folks that are waving their hands that want to speak.
Yeah,
we only
listen,
have
I won't retort. I'm cool.
I believe Cotton Campbell is on the line. Cotton, is that you?
Absolutely, I am here. Hello, everybody.
Hey,
Cotton. Hi, Cotton.
Hey.
You got something to say, Cotton? I only got 15 minutes left.
I do have something to say. I wanted to make sure it was clear before I started talking.
Go ahead.
I will agree with what the guest said as well. I don't think it's a black or white thing. I think it is a people thing, period, at this day and age. There are a lot of women out there who are using abortion as a birth control. And
mm-hmm.
at somewhere, there has to be a draw. I don't know where that line is, but there is a line mm-hmm. that needs to be drawn with making them take accountability beforehand, before using state money and saying, well, if I get pregnant, I'll just get an abortion. You know,
mm-hmm.
that type of mentality. And unfortunately, it exists because there are a lot of women out there who think like that, especially with this day and age, because they're so reckless with their bodies at this point.
Right. And so let me quickly, 216-780, I see that you wave your hand. Do you have a question or comment? And where are you calling from? I don't recognize the number, but 216-780.
Yes. Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can hear you, sir. Hey, what's
okay.
your name and where are you calling from?
My name is Victor, and I'm calling from Cleveland.
Okay, Victor, welcome.
The mm-hmm. lady that just finished speaking, I agree with her. My problem with this whole thing is not that they overturned it, because it's going to go back to the states. My problem is that we as a people, melanated people in this country, are all upset over the fact that something got overturned that was initially designed to exterminate us as a people. Margaret Sanger,
who's
the founder of Planned
Margaret Sanger.
Margaret Sanger was the founder of Planned Parenthood.
Mm-hmm.
She's the founder of Planned Parenthood. And in the Negro Project, it is stated that she said that the objective of her birth control and abortion agenda was to exterminate the black population. In New York City, not too long ago, more than 50% of all abortions were performed on black women. Kermit Gosnell in Philadelphia, who was arrested and sent to prison because of his abortion practices, did most of his abortion on black women. The problem here is the failure of us as a people, particularly black pastors, who have failed to instruct their congregations. Our community as a whole have failed to instruct our people in terms of personal responsibility. And one of the things that I think that is happening here is that we have become so politically divisive and driven in this society that anything one side says over another, then that's what people take and run with. I can't rock with people who think that killing unborn babies, because look at what California's doing. They've already passed a law in California that stated that now the child can be killed up to 28 days after birth. Margaret Sanger's grandson, Peter Sanger, stated that a parent should have a right to kill the children up to a year. What kind of society have we become when we allow white liberal leftist progressives to dictate to us our feelings and our emotions and how we as black folks, melanated people, are to respond to some of the issues that we face every single day? Because the only thing that they're doing for us is using us to advance their agenda. And this is why we as a people are behind everybody, because we will not leave the Democrat Party alone, and we will not separate from white liberal leftist progressives. And that's all I got
okay.
to say. Thanks, Mike.
No, I appreciate you. I appreciate you. You know, as I said, this is, you know, I've always said that we are that variety show, and we give everybody a platform to speak what they believe. And so, and what's your name again? I'm sorry.
My name is Victor, and I want everybody to understand.
Victor.
I'm not saying this because I'm angry at what the sister wrote. You know, obviously she's a brilliant lady, and so on and so forth. But I think at some point in time, we as a people got to wake up and realize that there's an agenda to exterminate us all. They're doing it in Africa with tetanus shots by sterilizing African women, Bill Gates, and all of them. We're dealing with some evil and wicked people. And if we don't start looking at the unborn child as a human being and dealing with this, you know, we're going to be exterminated as a people, just as Margaret wanted.
Well, I find that interesting that you said that, because I've had some folks say that, well, if we abolish abortion, that's going to bring more children, right? Who's going to take care of the children? And I want to go back to my guest. I'm thankful that Lyle is here with us, but I'm sure you've dealt with probably some cases, Lyle, but you know how the court system is. But who's going to take care of the children if we say, hey, look, no more abortions? People are still going to have kids, right? And at what point when it becomes an incest case, a rape case? You know, and as I said, it's going to go from state to state to make that decision. And I still look at it where I think it's wrong, though, for a bunch of men to make a decision about what a woman does. What's your thoughts on that, Lyle?
Well, Michael, I'd like to comment on the history of the U.S. Supreme Court. For some reason, they have somehow obtained an aura around them that they are perfect, which they clearly aren't. If you look back into the history of the Supreme Court, back into the early 1900s, they actually authorized the forcible sterilization of mentally ill people against their will so they could not procreate. And obviously that would be horrendous in this particular day and age. And so, as I have indicated to you in the past, elections matter. who you vote for your state or local representative is going to make your state law, and that's going to determine whether or not abortion or any other law stays in effect or is altered in the long run. So the courts are not perfect. They are made up of human beings, and right now there is a significant lopsidedness in our current Supreme Court. If this Roe v. Wade decision comes down the way it looks like it's about to, I hope that answers your question. But for the sake of history, the Supreme Court has not always made the right decisions, and I doubt that they're doing it right now if this comes to be.
Hey, Mike, can I interject something real quick?
Well, I have my stuff on mute, but go ahead and you can comment.
Yeah, because the other thing because you made the comment about men making decisions, when it's not necessarily about men making decisions, but one of the things as a person of faith that I understand is that our Creator gave the responsibility of us as men to protect our women and children, and black melanated women and children and our children, and we as a people just been under attack, and we it's time for us to stand up and bring ourselves to the point where we can work these issues out, rather than allowing white liberal leftist progressives who don't like us anyway to decide for us.
Okay, so I'm sorry. I'm trying to go ahead and bring up the board again, and unfortunately, my laptop kind of like acted crazy. I have everyone there still, right? Okay, so Janet, did you have a last remark, because we're down to our last 6 minutes of the show? And again, I want to thank my co-host Janet Davis, Officer Crenshaw, Cotton Campbell, and of course Timon Shue for being on the show today. Janet, do you have any final words you want to say?
Just one thing. Well, a few things. I feel a woman has a right to choose on her own, and no one else should be making that decision. That woman has to stand before God on Judgment Day, and nobody's going to stand with her. So you reap what you sow. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cotton Campbell, do you have a final word you want to say before we get out of here?
Yeah, I was going to say there's two things to this. It's like, and I'll be real quick when I say this. When I was having children, two children, I wanted to get my tubes cut, and they said, no, you might want kids later. And I said, no, I don't. But I ended up having four kids. I love my kids. And then on the other side of it, you don't want us to have an abortion, but you don't want us to get our tubes tied when we're well over a certain age to be able to make the decision of not wanting to have kids going forward, to not bring in more children, yet you may not be able to take care of going forward, you know. So it's like the guest said, the system is lopsided.
Officer Crenshaw, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's your favorite word to comment?
I love the essay that Dr. Smith read. Also, my thought on this is kind of warped, because a woman does have a right to choose, but with all the politicians doing the choosing for them, with the war in Ukraine and everything else going on, you got to look at what is the purpose behind all of this. I mean, you got a lot of rich people that want children that can't have children, so that opens up the adoption market if they shut this down, to where now these women having babies give them up for adoption, so it's a quicker and easier adoption for these people that can't get kids as quick as they want. So you also have Steve Bannon, who is Trump's right-hand man, who's saying, go ahead, we'll raise them up just right. So they're trying to create a cult of what they want. And it doesn't matter what color. They're trying to create that cult of civilization and people.
Mike, I have one more thing to say.
just a comment from Officer Crenshaw. The thing about adoption, I just saw an article where they were saying, as far as adoption, when it comes to children of color with melanin skin, their rate to be able to be adopted is far less than a white person. So you're having babies, and most of the southern states don't want to give you Medicaid or take care of children anyway.
Right, but if they raise them with the mindset and the morals and values that they want, not what we want, because they're killing us off, because when the war comes, when World War III comes, we're gone. We're going to go fight and die. So what's left is our children from all the babies. That they can cultivate.
Can I say one last thing?
Go ahead.
Can I say one last thing?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Okay, I don't think that it's right for any country to legislate a woman's body at all.
No, I don't either.
I don't think that's the real issue. And one of the things that has come out in the in that leaked decision was when Amy Coney Barrett said something about they need to get a new supply. These are the exact words. A new supply of domestic babies. And that says something to me. A new supply, as though there is a supply chain.
That was not
so. When you consider, you know, okay, so do we, you know, so what does that mean if it's not black and white? Because domestic babies is nothing more than a euphemism, is a dog whistle.
Right.
So that says we don't have to import them from Europe anymore.
Right.
Okay,
look,
that's
hey,
all
Michael,
I wanted to
can
say
I say something?
Hey, look, I have to go.
Michael, can I say something?
I'm sorry.
Michael?
Yes, go ahead, sir.
This is Lyle. All I can say
is
people want stable issues in their life. They want their lives to be consistent. And unfortunately, right now, it's not. There's no stability in regarding this issue. Above the Supreme Court, it says equal justice under law. That's all anybody wants. That's all I want. I think that's what everybody wants. They want to be treated fairly no matter what.
Cool.
And right now, this is creating an unstable situation for our country, and it's unfortunate.
Right. Okay. Hey, look, you guys, I got to go. We're down to like 10 seconds, but thankfully, Blog Talk gives me a few minutes after the show is over with. I want to thank my co-host, Janet Pollock Hawkins Davis, the one and only Mr. Time and Ship. Also, Cotton Campbell, and thank you, Dr. Cynthia Lee Smith, for joining us again. Hopefully you will come back again. And our special guest, former lawyer, Mr. Lyle Dixon, for joining us on this Saturday. Next week, make sure you tune in to the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, broadcasting live from the ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, I'm here with a bunch of family and friends, and we're celebrating a great Mother's Day weekend. So they want to say to each and all of you,
Happy Mother's Day!
Hello. You know what I'm doing?
Sounds nice.
Okay.
Thank you.
God bless.
Thank you.
Right, Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Thank you.
God bless. Peace.
Happy
See you next
Mother's
week
Day.
Here in the TMGS. Don't forget, Cotton Campbell coming up in TMGS, June the 26th.